Okay, our first reading is from the book of Matthew, 28th chapter, verses 16 through 20. The 11 disciples went to the mountain of Galilee, where Jesus had told them to go. And when they saw him, they paid him homage, but some were dubious. And when Jesus approached them and spoke these words, "All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. You shall go and make disciples of all people, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. Teach them to observe everything I commanded you. I will be with you day in and day out, as you'll see, until the culmination of the age." And now our reading is from Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. "But one day after finishing school, I was called into a little church down in Montgomery, Alabama, and I started preaching there. Things were going well in that church. It was a marvelous experience. But one day, a year later, a lady by the name of Rosa Parks decided that she wasn't going to take it any longer. She stayed in the bus seat, and you may not remember it because it's way back now, several years, but it was the beginning of a movement. Things were going well for the first few days, but then after about 10 or 15 days later, after the white people in Montgomery knew that we meant business, they started doing some nasty things. They started making nasty telephone calls, and it came to the point that some days more than 40 telephone calls would come in, threatening my life, the life of my family, the life of my children. I took it for a while in a strong manner. But I never will forget one night very late. It was around midnight, and you can have some strange experiences at midnight. I'd been out meeting with the steering committee all that night, and I came home and my wife was in the bed, and I immediately crawled into bed to get some rest to get up early the next morning to try to keep things going. And immediately the telephone started ringing and I picked it up. On the other end was an ugly voice. That voice said to me in substance, 'Nigga, we are tired of you and your mess now. And if you aren't out of this town in 3 days, we're going to blow your brains out and blow up your house.' I heard these things before, but for some reason that night it got to me. I turned over and I tried to go to sleep, but I couldn't sleep. I was frustrated, bewildered. And then I got up and went back to the kitchen and I started warming some coffee, thinking that coffee would give me a little relief. And then I started thinking about many things. I thought back on the theology and philosophy that I had just studied in the universities, trying to give philosophical and theological reasons for the existence and the reality of sin and evil, but the answer didn't quite come there. I sat there and thought about a beautiful little daughter who had just been born about a month earlier. We have 4 children now, but we only had 1 then. She was the darling of my life. I'd come in at night after night and see that little gentle smile. And I sat at the table thinking about that little girl, thinking about the fact that she could be taken away from me any minute. And I started thinking about a dedicated, devoted, and loyal wife who was over there asleep. And she could be taken from me, or I could be taken from her. And I got to the point that I couldn't take it any longer. I was weak. Something said to me, 'You can't call on Daddy now. He's up in Atlanta, 175 miles away. You can't even call on Mama now. You've got to call on that something and that person that your daddy used to tell you about, that power that can make a way out of no way.' And I discovered that the religion had come to become real to me, and I had to know God for myself. And I bowed down over that cup of coffee. I will never forget it. And oh yes, I prayed a prayer and I prayed out loud that night. I said, 'Lord, I must confess that I'm weak now. I'm faltering, I'm losing my courage.' And it seemed at that moment that I could hear an inner voice saying to me, 'Martin Luther, lo, I will be with you even until the end of the world.' And I'll tell you, I've seen the lightning flash, I've heard the thunder roll, I felt sin breakers dashing, trying to conquer my soul. But I heard the voice of Jesus. He promised never to leave me, never to leave me alone. No, never alone. No, never alone. He promised never to leave me, never to leave me alone. And I'm going on in believing in him. You'd better know him and know his name and know how to call his name.
Earlier this week, I spent a few days at the Manuka Conference and Retreat Center. How many of you have you been there? Yeah, okay. And so that's in Corbett. It's stewardship by the First Presbyterian, owned by the First Presbyterian Church downtown. I think it's be a nice place for a retreat. Well, they have a little spot there called the Hideaway, and they have a nice gift to ministers within the presbytery, an opportunity to be able to spend a week there or whatnot. And so I spent some time there looking over, planning some worship services. I was going to plan through July, but I didn't quite get that far. I didn't get through Easter. With help from comments from many of you through email, a personal conversation, a survey I printed in the bulletin and online. Thank you. And a conversation, as I said, responses for that. And my takeaway from all of that was to make sure to take time in sermons and worship services to focus on some personal spiritual experience, not just necessarily my personal one, but that spiritual experience. Grace might be another word. Grace through faith is how the Apostle Paul put it. Grace being the gift and faith being the yes to the gift. Grace received when we're vulnerable. It's breaking open, a time when our ego's defenses are down, when our heart is soft as opposed to hard. It's also a thin place. The word thin place sometimes refers to actual geographical places where you feel closer to heaven, so to speak. But it can also be within the inner landscape, a thin place of when that barrier between the divine and the mundane is thin, it's permeable. And the Bible is filled with stories of those types of thin places, usually on mountaintops, where the commandments are received, or Moses is confronted by the burning bush, or Elijah sleeps in the cave and is confronted by the still, small voice, the voice of the still silence. Story where the woman touches the cloak of Jesus and feels the healing, where Paul and Silas, in the midst of prison and in chains, joyfully sing hymns. When the risen Christ on the road to Emmaus breaks the bread and the couple that are journeying with him get it. They see who he is and what he means. Those are all stories of grace. They're stories of experience. And while they're all put in metaphorical language, we shouldn't let the language fool us. The reason they exist is because they touch on something that is real, but they're told in the stories of metaphor because you can really only get them by spinning around that way. Martin Luther King recounts one such experience in the sermon he delivered in 1967 that Tom read a portion of. We just heard it was an intense experience for him. His life is threatened, and he's weak, and he's vulnerable. And it is during that vulnerability that he experiences grace, the thin place. It comes from this inner voice, who he notes is the voice of Jesus. And what is said is what the risen Christ says to the disciples before he descends into heaven, "Lo, I will be with you always until the end of the age." But that's what Martin Luther King hears, but it's not as a text or a scripture. He hears it as an experience, a voice speaking to him, addressing him, Martin Luther, "I will be with you always till the end of the age." Now, this voice doesn't come from a vacuum. It doesn't come just out of the blue to him. He is a minister. I mean, he knows these texts. He has been to seminary, has a PhD in religion. He grew up with it in his experience with his church and with his family. But it is personal for him. I'm going to pass something around to you. This is the Bible that I received when I was in kindergarten from my kindergarten teacher, who was also my Sunday school teacher, Mrs. Longnecker. And my mother, who died a couple of years ago, had made the leather covering for it. And it says Andy. I will be Andy in heaven, I presume. And she, on the back of it, did some carving in there. And that is a wonderful symbol for me that I keep as a childhood faith. And that faith informs my faith. But it isn't enough. It's necessary, but it isn't enough. It's necessary in that it's early on, it was implanted within me, but it's not enough in that it's not mature. I cherish it, but as Martin Luther King wrote in his sermon, you can't call on mommy or daddy now. So what King realized that night is that he would need an adult faith for the adult life and the adult challenges that he was facing. And he didn't realize it intellectually. It didn't come through his understanding of theory, but he realized it in his prayer of desperation over his late night coffee, all alone in the kitchen, with the pressure so intense that he breaks. He knows he cannot do it alone. And then there's experience of grace. And it seemed at that moment that I could hear an inner voice saying to me, Martin Luther, I will be with you even until the end of the world. And King said in his sermon that you'd better know him, know his name, and know how to call his name. And so that Jesus for King was shaped by his childhood, by his family, by his education. It's his Jesus, so to speak. It's the inner voice that calls to him and upon whom he can call. So my question is this to all of us. Who is your inner voice? Who do you know? Who or what do you call on? Part of the work of religious education, of worship, of personal spiritual growth, the old word for that is discipleship, is come to a mature understanding of our inner voice. Because that inner voice is really our grounding, our moral compass, our rock, our shield, our vine, all of those metaphors coming from the Bible too, our source, our strength, our higher power. And it grows with us as we cultivate it. And if we don't cultivate the voice, it can only provide us with the responses where we left it, usually from our childhood. So when I heard the voice to go into the ministry, I remember that moment. I was alone in our mobile home, and it was simply a clarity to me. It was like an idea. It wasn't reasoned out. It simply said, be a minister. But that experience started for me a process of exploration. When my wife came home, I told her about it, and she rolled her eyes. She told me she promised that she would never marry a minister. And she said, well, you better tell Francis, hoping that would kind of get it out of me. The Francis was our minister. And so I made an appointment with him, as it turned out, the rest is history. I began that journey. But it didn't take long to realize that that voice was still probably a junior high or middle school or elementary school voice. Because as I restarted my journey of faith, now with a focus on the ministry, my faith was really at a childhood or middle school level. And it needed to be shaped with life experience and with study and with practice. It's also interesting that there are times when I think my inner voice should be there and it isn't. After I lost my son, I talked about that last week, I soon found a counselor and I shared with him, and I don't know if he asked it or I volunteered it, but I said my experience of God was like a dead tree stump. No voice. C.S. Lewis in his book, A Grief Observed, after losing his wife, talks about trying to reach out to God, and he's just banging on a door that is double padlocked from the inside. And that's his experience of that. It isn't until later, after time, after whatever it might be, that you can look back on it. It takes time to look back and see where grace has been in that journey. I don't see the inner voice as a dead tree stump now, but I needed to when I did. My inner voice, I would say, is a bit wounded, beaten up. You know, I now see, I never really realized the whole point of the risen Christ with the wounds in the hands, but I kind of get it now. That experience of resurrection never loses the wounds or the scars. That's always there and becomes a part of you. And so those wounds, now that image actually kind of makes sense to me. The wounds make us, shape us, and there's a maturity in all of that. And so when I call on my inner voice now in times of reflection, the voice is one of assurance and of presence, a wounded healer, we might say, to use the phrase from Henry Nouwen. And really, that's what I want to say to you this morning. On Martin Luther King Jr. Sunday, we often talk about the ethics and the civil rights and the marches, as the children really talked about a lot. But he came to his role, thrust into it, as a person of faith, for whom his personal struggle and the struggle of those he served really was a spiritual struggle. His vision of the beloved community is a spiritual vision. And so I just want to honor that about him today. To honor his challenge to all of us to know our own inner voice and to know how to call on that voice.